Imagine that you've just learned that your son, 2 weeks away from his 21st birthday, has been killed in a terrible car crash on the Mission Bridge in British Columbia. You go into shock immediately, followed by denial, disbelief. This can't be happening. There must be some mistake. The pain is unbearable, but bear it you must. As the reality of what happened sinks in, you feel numb. The world seems to move without you. You see it, but it's all just a blur. You hear people talking, but it sounds like their voices are coming from an echo chamber. You don't really hear the words and sentences. It's all just blah, blah, blah. Your heart aches with grief. Now imagine a very dear and well-meaning friend speaks to you at the funeral saying, "He's in a better place now. At least it was quick. He didn't suffer. God must have needed another angel in the choir. Otherwise, why would he have called him home so soon?" Would you find this kind of support helpful? Some people would answer yes, some people would answer no, I would imagine. Let's see what today's readings from the legend of Job can teach us about how to support someone who's hurting. I read these readings and I prayed on it. I picked up three things out of these readings that from the friends of Job that I think are appropriate to talk about today. Two of them are do's and one of them's a don't. Do, be there. Don't, presume to know everything about God. And do, be patient. So first, be there. Job's friends begin with showing up. They traveled, they heard about him losing his wealth, his health, his family. They knew or may have known that he had cursed the day he was born. This man was really hurting. So his friends, they showed up. And for 7 days, they were silent. And they grieved with him and mourned with him. And that was probably just what he needed at that time. That was probably helpful. Sometimes silence is golden. Earlier this spring, I was watching an NHL playoff game on TV, and partway through the game, one of the coaches pulled the goalie. And this is difficult for the goalie. It's hard on his ego and self-esteem and so on. And he's feeling pretty bad about this. He skates to the bench, and I saw him, the gate opens, and he goes right by the player, straight into the corridor that heads towards the dressing room, and just has a little quiet time with himself. In between periods, Kelly Rudy, one of the color commentators, who is a former NHL goalie himself, commented about this and brought it to our attention what was happening. He said, "Did you notice that when the goalie went to the bench and went straight through into the corridor, none of the players patted him on the back, none of the players tapped his pads with their stick, nobody said a word to him. Nobody said that's okay or anything. Nothing." And Kelly said, that's exactly the right response in this situation. This goalie did not need to be patronized. He just needed to have some time to himself, and the silence that his teammates offered him actually showed him their support. And sometimes silence is the best. Remember a number of years ago, I was in hospital recovering from some back surgery, and I was in quite a bit of pain. I was on a lot of drugs, so I was sleepy and tired and hurting. And lots of people came by to visit. And I was so thankful for the way they chose to spend time with me visiting. If I was tired and I needed to nod off, they were okay with that. And they didn't leave saying, oh, he's sleeping now, we can leave. They stayed. And they talked amongst themselves. And when I would wake up, they would still be there. They never made me feel like I had to participate in the conversation or entertain them. They were simply there. What a gift. Other ways you can be there. Meals. Peggy and I, we've been in the Alberta health system for a number of years now. We've seemed to, one gets sick, then the other gets sick, then the other. And the good news is right now we're both very well. So that's awesome. But last winter, there was a period where we were both sick at the same time. And that was really difficult. And the meals started arriving. And what a gift that was. When neither one of us felt like making supper, well, how nice it was to just go to the freezer, pull something out, and warm it up for dinner. One of the things that I've experienced also going through this being sick business is everybody wants to know, how's Peggy? How's Peggy? How's Peggy? And she was in the hospital a while ago, and I would spend the day with her, and then I'd come home and I'd spend at least an hour on the phone phoning everybody with the updates. And I would get texts and there'd be voicemail messages, how's Peggy, how's Peggy? And that consumed quite a bit of my day. How much easier it would have been if I would have thought to ask someone, would you do that? How about I update you once a day and you call all these other people? And so that's something, if you know someone who's in a situation like that, that's a gift you could offer. Say, I'll be the one that makes the phone calls with the updates. A real gift that I saw one time, how to support someone who's hurting, was the young man that I told you about when I opened this talk, who died on the Mission Bridge, was actually my brother's son. And my brother and his wife made the decision to host the luncheon at the after-funeral luncheon at their home. And there was a friend of Diane's, that's my sister-in-law, who volunteered to stay home. She didn't go to the funeral service. She stayed home at Bill and Diane's home and prepared the luncheon. And then when the rest of us all arrived there after the funeral, she looked after everything, and Diane didn't have to do anything as far as hosting us. She could visit with people and grieve with all of us and all of that stuff, and it was very healing for her to not have to worry about this because her friend had offered to do it all. Just, I'll take care of it. And what a gift that was. A couple of years ago, my sister's husband died, and there was a man called George who was a good friend of Joe's, and they used to coffee together a lot. Joe died in January, his birthday is in July. Well, when July came along, my sister got flowers and a card from George remembering Joe's birthday, and it was just a show of support reminding her that he hadn't forgotten. And on the one-year anniversary of Joe's death, George sent flowers and a card again. He hadn't forgotten. But those are a few tips for you of ways you could support somebody and be there for somebody. The second thing I picked up from today's readings, don't presume to know everything about God. Job's friends kind of did that in this story. The first friend said, you know, it's all your fault. Just like Peggy's friend said when she got cancer, it's all your fault. And the second friend said, you need to repent. You need to get right with God. You need to apologize. And the third friend said, you know, God punishes the guilty ones. No wonder you had all these troubles. When someone you know is hurting, I would offer this, I would suggest to you, be careful with sharing your beliefs. unless you're absolutely sure you understand theirs. Because if it's not congruent with their belief system, and we talked about beliefs last week, if you remember, sometimes it might not be helpful. Things like saying God must have needed another angel in the choir. When you're really hurting and really painful, whether you believe that or not, at that moment, that might not be helpful. That might not help the healing process. Or another one, this is all part of God's plan. Because a lot of people believe that God has your whole life planned out for you. God knows the exact moment and day and manner of your death, and it's all part of the big plan. And when you're hurting and something has happened, well, if it's me, it's not going to be helpful to me to hear that. I'd rather hear what Peggy said, someone just say, you know, I'm sorry, can I offer you a hug? Or something like that. And then there's another one, God calls us home. And a lot of people believe that too, and that's okay. But is it helpful at the time when you're filled with grief and pain? My sister told me a story a while ago about an elderly gentleman in her church had passed away, and she was telling me how wonderful it was that this someone else in the church shared some information with a little grandson who was just a little tyke. I'm sure it was his first encounter with death. And if he's anything like I was when my grandma died, when I was a little guy, it was pretty horrible. Don't understand all this death stuff, and you know, his grandpa's gone now, has died, and he's crying, he sees all the adults crying, and someone went to him and said, you know, God loved grandpa so much that God called grandpa to heaven, and grandpa's in heaven now with God. And it's going to happen to you one day. God's going to come and get you and take you to heaven. And I see some people cringing. That's exactly what I did when I heard this story. Don't tell my grandchildren that when I die. Just tell them you love them, and you know it must hurt an awful lot. I remember last week I quoted a United Church minister, and I really liked this one, and it was, God's tears are the first to fall. So there's a do and a don't. Now I have another do. Be patient. Don't rush the process. Last week, our readings from Job ended with Job's wife telling him to curse God and die. I'm not sure she was really telling him to die, but what she might have been saying, if I were to be bold enough to translate, is get over it. And sometimes that might not be helpful. Are you familiar with the process of the stages of grieving or stages of dying? First there's shock and denial, then anger, bargaining, depression, and finally acceptance. And we move through those when we become ill or when we are diagnosed with a terminal illness, we go through those stages. Our loved ones go through them as well, but not everybody goes through them at the same pace. One might be at one stage while another is at a different stage, and so on. Imagine grandma is dying. And you say to her, grandma, it's time for your bath. Now, grandma has already been through the stages of denial and bargaining and anger. Now she's in depression. She knows she's dying. She's not at peace with it yet until she gets to acceptance. So you say, grandma, it's time for your bath. And grandma says, what's the point? I'm dying anyway. Now imagine you're still kind of back in the denial stage. So you say to grandma, oh, don't be silly, grandma, you're not dying. Let's have your bath. That's risky, because what could happen is you could drag grandma all the way back to the denial stage where you are, and now she has to do all that hard work, grieving work, to get back to where she is now. It would be nice if Grandma had a really good sense of humor and she could say, well, then at least let's have the bath and get me cleaned up for heaven. But we don't know. Better to, and I've done this since I read this tip somewhere. I think it was from Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who's credited with pioneering these stages of business. And she suggested when someone is in this stage where the depression before they get to acceptance and they know they're dying, talk about why their life mattered or matters. Talk about all the good things that you've received from having known them. How they taught you compassion, love, trust, all of that good stuff. Because that's really what we all need, isn't it? We need to know we matter. We want to know that we matter, that our life matters. So that's it. Be there. Don't presume to know everything about God. And be patient. When we lit the Christ candle this morning, we sang, "We're One." You sang it beautifully. Me, not so much. But we reminded ourselves that we're all in this together. And whatever life throws at us, we need to rely on each other to see us through it. Without the love and support of those around us, life can be awful difficult, can't it? Let's commit to being there for each other again as we sing together, "We Are Pilgrims." The words will